Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00007. Recorded on November 7, 2022. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. Chapter 7. The Newark. The Newark. Chapter 7.
Please note, the opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
Save It For Me. I think is one of those perfect rock and roll songs. It's Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons, right? Save It For Me. A song about two lovers who are apart for one reason or another. It seems like the guy's off away, you know, perhaps off in the military or off at college, or it's a Jersey song, so maybe somebody's down the shore for the summer and the other one ain't. These are the kind of things that, you know, happen with young love, right? Teenage love, early 20s, and that's what rock and roll is always all about from the beginning. I understand rock and roll, you know, as like a dictionary definition, right? To be, you know, a slang term for the sex act, right? And all the music of the 50s that was considered rock and roll, and into the early 60s, like this Save It For Me and Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. It's music that's centered around the things that happen in the relationships involving young love, right? And this is just one of those examples. It's not like the one and only perfect rock and roll song. It is just one of many. It's within its own genre. It's telling a story. It's expressing feelings. It's utilizing the musical technology of the time, and a lot of the styles that were brought in. Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, they began in Newark, not far from where I lived when I was a kid, right? In the First Ward, doing the doo-wop stuff, you know, sitting on the front doorstep, bunch of guys, and doing that doo-wop music. It's a very vocal. The idea was to just make songs a cappella, and you'd have, you know, kind of like a barbershop quartet. You'd have your bass guy, you know, the three-part harmony, four-part harmony, like the bluegrass people still do. You know, even without instruments, they would make songs, you know, and that was a style of time. In fact, I remember we had an oldies station, like early 70s, think about it, like 1970, 1971, they were playing oldies, and they were playing music like Frankie Valli and Buddy Holly and, you know, things from the 50s and early 60s, and they were calling it the oldies. It was only like 6 years earlier, and it was already an oldie. Yeah, think about it. You're a Gen Xer like me, somebody my age, well into their 50s, right? You look back at like the grunge era, like it was just yesterday, but it was actually fucking 30 years ago, right? That's oldie, right? That's oldie. What was 30 years prior to me being a little kid, you know, like in the early 70s? That was like the World War II stuff. Shit, I don't even know how to describe that. It was kind of like big band and like those loud women and, you know, everything was black and white back then. Well, what that music was to me as a kid in the 70s, grunge era music is now to a kid at this time in 2022. But yeah, they had the oldies station. Now, my first favorite song that I can remember having was a Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons song. It's called Ragdoll, right? Yeah, I remember, Ragdoll was a story about a guy who was in love with a poor girl, right? Girl from like the wrong side of town, and she dressed in rags and everybody made fun of her, but this guy just loved her for who she was, and everybody told him, you know, stay away. That was, for whatever reason, that was the first favorite song I ever had that I can remember. See, we had, I lived in, you know, after we moved out of Newark, right? I mean, like I said, I lived in the first ward. That was where all the Italians lived, right? And I was in a section called Forest Hill. We had an apartment over there on Grafton Avenue, right on Branch Brook Park, right, a little skinny section of it, right? And it was over by these tennis courts. And once you crossed over the tennis courts, you're basically out of the park and into, I don't know what the hell it was called, Rosedale or Roseville or something like that. I didn't know this shit when I was there. I had to learn it later on in life. We left that neighborhood when I was 3. And moved over to the next town down Hillside, right? Down to the west, south and west of Newark. Down by the airport, a little bit west down Route 22. We lived in that town Hillside after we left that first ward. And I was saying, we go across Branch Brook Park from where I lived, in an apartment over there, was the neighborhood where Frankie Valli and all these kind of like mob movie actors and shit grew up. They were all right from that neighborhood. And I literally, when my mother was pushing me around in a baby carriage, or actually, you know, pushing my brother around, and I was walking alongside. Now, instead of going down Grafton Avenue towards Mount Prospect, the main drag through that neighborhood over there, we could have walked across the park and been in that neighborhood with Joe Pesci, Frankie Valli, all the Four Seasons, and who else was from that neighborhood? There was a couple of people, you know, a couple of those Italian guys, actors in all the mob movies. It grew up right over there. It was heavily Italian neighborhood. But I ended up our family moved me out to Hillside, New Jersey, like I said, that next town over down Route 22, south and west out of downtown Newark. And I remember, my father had bought a Philips stereo system, right? This space age looking thing for the time. I don't remember it very well. I think it was like a kind of all in one. Had a turntable built into the top of it. Had an 8-track player, AM, FM. It was black face and kind of like faux wood around the sides and top. And it may have even possibly had like a cassette player built into the top of it. I'm not positive. I can't remember that detail of it. But, you know, I guess at the time it was something. But really, within a couple of years, it was just a piece of shit. But that was the family stereo that we had in Hillside. And, that stereo ends up being a very important element of my existence, because later on in life, when I became a teenager, and I was getting all involved with drugs, and I was listening to all this, what my father called narcotic rock music, right? Narcotic rock. I got in trouble in eighth grade, and I was suspended, unbeknownst to my parents, from school, and I was out getting drunk and high, and you know, smoking cigarettes, and had a little accident with gasoline and fire, and I got burnt up, so it was kind of obvious that shit had gone down, and my father was just pissed the fuck off, and he blamed it on that narcotic rock, all that narcotic music you're listening to, and he went in my bedroom and ripped that fucking little stereo out of walls. I inherited that stereo. That became mine. My father got a job working for Fisher Stereos, which was a great American stereo company at the time in the 70s. They made killer stuff, you know. They competed with the old Pioneer when Pioneer was American, and Kenwood and all that. You know, that was a top-of-the-line make, and he worked for them. So he got his own big old receiver, humongous speakers, you know. You turn that thing halfway up, and it would start to shake the glass out of the windows. It was crazy fucking loud, and, you know. He got that nice stereo, and I was the oldest brother, so I inherited the previous piece of shit that Phillips I was talking about, and then my brother ended up getting a lesser Fisher, and then I was pissed. Well, I ended up getting a Fisher too. We all had Fishers in the end, but I had that little while had to, I inherited that old Phillips thing, and you know, that narcotic music. My father ripped that fucking stereo out of the wall in my room, fucking stomped all the way across the house, went in the garage, threw the thing on the ground, grabbed an axe, and just started hacking away at the stereo. That fucking narcotic rock and roll, you know. And I didn't talk to him for like an entire year after that. That was like the dividing line between him and I. We just really were never able to make it right after that moment in time. But on that stereo, when I was a little kid, when it was new, you know, my mother got, I think, came from her aunt or something like that as a gift. We got this Four Seasons double album. It was the Four Seasons Edizion de Oro, the Four Seasons Gold Edition, right? It was like literally like the jacket was like gold and black, and you know, it seemed like the thing. And I listened to that just as frequently as I could, you know. That was like my mother's music, and then my father had all the Elvis and Johnny Cash and Marty Robbins. That's what I listened to him, and he, what else? Bobby V. That was my father's music at that time. Again, the golden oldies, right? They were like 7 years old, maybe 10. You know, the golden oldies at the time. That, what was that oldies channel? It's WCBS FM 101.5 or something like that in New York City. But yeah, I had this double album. It was all the songs that, like, all the 45s that the Frankie Valli and Four Seasons had, that up to that time that had, you know, gone gold. And it was a great collection. You know, Save It For Me was on there, and Ragdoll was on there. They had these songs, you know. It was funny. I have Tang Cousins, who, you know, my aunt and uncle had kids. They're roughly mine and my brother's age. And, you know, they're named Ronnie and Sherry, right? And there's songs by the Four Seasons on those albums, you know. One was Ronnie, one was Sherry. And we always used to make fun of that, you know. Not fun, but just kind of point out that fact. Of course, the Ronnie on the Four Seasons song is a girl, like Veronica. But my cousin Ronnie is like Ronald, the dude, you know. So it doesn't perfectly apply. But kind of had that Four Seasons, Italian, Newark thing going on. But they were actually from Belleville. Now the parents were from Newark, but they moved up to Belleville shortly after getting married, and they started having kids. And you know, that's Belleville was an Italian town, just like the North Ward was an Italian district of Newark, and they bordered. You know, you went north out of Newark and you were in Belleville, and then Belleville goes up into Nutley, like up, well, what's it, 7, on Highway 7. It's really just like a main drag through all these towns. And You know, I kicked around a lot up there. My grandfather on my mother's side ended up moving to Belleville. They lived in two different places, not far. You know, Belleville's not that big. They lived on, what was it, Joralemon when we were all really little, and then they moved over to, off of Division Street onto Adelaide, and one block up and two, three blocks down on Tappan or Tappan, however you say it, it was Tappan. That's where my grandfather eventually moved to, who was from Newark. Now, he lived on the west side over by Grove behind the Pabst Brewery when I was young. And actually, my other grandparents, you know, my Ukrainian grandparents, they lived on the west side of Newark also, over by Westside Park, somewhere in there, maybe Avon Avenue, I'm not really sure. That's where I started out. The first year I was alive, that's where we lived, and then we moved over to the North Ward, First Ward, for when I was 2 and 3. But I started out on the west side because I didn't even know that. Last time I saw my father, he told me, and it was the first I ever heard. He said my grandfather, my Ukrainian grandfather, used to push me around the soccer field that they played on in a baby cart and baby carriage. So I had no idea. No idea whatsoever, you know. My memory started after that. I do remember Grafton Avenue. Not everything, but I remember a lot, you know, a lot. More than you would think for somebody who was only like 2-3 years old. But anyway, yeah, so Belleville. And they ended up just like the Sopranos, right? The Sopranos started out in Newark, and they were in that first ward, right? Of course, they're fictitious characters, but they are representing a reality, right? Art copy and life. They moved out of the first ward, and they went up Bloomfield Avenue out to North Caldwell, right? North Caldwell, and that's exactly where my aunt and uncle, when they left Belleville, they went to North Caldwell, right? So my cousins, they went from Newark to Belleville to North Caldwell. Belleville is where Uncle June lived, I think. One of the main characters, somebody was in Bloomfield, somebody was in Belleville. I think Uncle June was in Belleville, and I think Tony Soprano's mother was in Bloomfield. I got a guy at church, buddy of mine. He comes from Bloomfield, right? His mother comes from the west side of Newark. It's a small world, right? I'm in Texas, and this shit happened. And I'm not done, right? There's more. There's more as far as the smallness of this world is concerned. But, yeah, they left to North Caldwell. North Caldwell is exactly where Tony Soprano had his little... Well, little. He had a small mansion, basically. They kept referring to it as a mansion. It's a big house. I don't know. I call that a mansion. But that was North Caldwell, right? Bloomfield Avenue, they referred to as Guinea Gulch. There was that time when, the Italians all fled out of Newark, and they went up Bloomfield Avenue for the most part, not totally, but for the most part. So many of them did. And when you go up Bloomfield Avenue, you're going up, obviously to Bloomfield. You're not really going so much, part of Belleville gets over by Bloomfield Avenue. It goes out to Montclair, Verona, out that away. And, I'm forgetting a lot of my Jersey. It's been a while, but it's something like that. In fact, I think I got, cousins in Verona now, cousins in West Caldwell now. I had another Italian cousin somewhere. I think possibly that's in Verona also. And I think my aunt and uncle have retired down the shore. On the bay side, on the mainland side of Long Beach Island. I forget what their little area is called. But those are good people. I love those people. All of them, without exception. It's a thing in the first ward, that I'm not done with is that with the Newark style hot dogs. A lot of people have no idea about this. It's truly a Jersey thing. Newark style hot dogs. They're also called Italian hot dogs. Anywhere you go in New Jersey, and like North Jersey, excuse me about the cough. You go into a pizzeria up there, nine times out of ten, they're going to serve their version of an Italian hot dog. It's a very popular thing. You go up and down, like, from Long Beach Island north all the way up towards Sandy Hook on the coast, right? Wherever there's a boardwalk, you're going to have stands up there that are selling Italian hot dogs, Italian sausage, you know. They're done the same way, these Newark style. The Newark style is they got a pizza roll that they cut into half or sometimes quarter. You get a single double. That means one hot dog or two. They use really good hot dogs. The bread is great. You could eat the bread by itself. They smear it in mustard, and then they jam it with the hot dogs, and they put onions and peppers on, right? They fry up onions and peppers, and they put the fried potatoes, you know, in the grease on top of that. A lot of people get ketchup on top. I don't do the ketchup thing. I just go with the mustard. But and then it gets kind of wrapped up tight, and you got yourself like a little football. And while it's wrapped up tight like that, you give it a couple of minutes, it all starts to kind of congeal together. You know, it starts to become like one flavor of all these things combined. And holy shit, does it taste good. It's a meal. It's big. You know, nowadays, I think if you get a double, it's probably going to be like $10-$11. But it used to be like $4, $5, $6. But it'll fill you up. It'll fill you up. You know, it'll fill two people up. It's big. And that's why they go single and double with it. You can get a little smaller, go with the single. But it is a hell of a meal, right? And down in the first ward, you had Dickie D's, which I never ate at personally, right? I never ate in the first ward at the original place. It's right on Bloomfield Avenue. But once upon a time, they opened another one up down in Union, which is the next town over west from Hillside, down 22, right? Some side road. I don't remember what the fuck the name of the road was. It was right behind the old Rickles Home Improvement. It was just called D's Italian Hot Dog Place, and we went there all the time. My mother, you know, we drove around, whatever we were doing. I used to go to the Boys Club over there. You know, we lived in Hillside, and she would drive into Union to pick us up at the Boys Club, and on the way home, we would stop at D's and get Italian hot dogs. We did it frequently. It wasn't like a one-off deal. It was kind of almost routine. You know, it was a very cheap way to eat. You keep those kids all full up, and we loved it. Me and my brother, you know, we ate that all the time. And looked forward to it. You know, while you're in Union, New Jersey over there, that's where the Four Seasons got their name from. There was a bowling alley they drove out to when they were not famous yet. You know, they had changed the name of the band like 60 times over. You know, I'm exaggerating, but they had all these different names they were trying to go by, looking for what would catch and make them famous. And they went and played out at this bowling alley in Union on Route 22. It was called the Four Seasons. They walked out of there, and they just looked at the sign and said, that's what we're going to be. We'll be the Four Seasons, right? So that's where the name came from. A lot of people don't know that story. When I was a teenager, they turned that place into like some strip club or some shit like that. It wasn't even a bowling alley anymore. I don't know what it is now. But there was another competitor, you know. Dickie D's may or may not have been the actual original. There was another one called Jimmy Buff's. That was out of Newark. I think they were more west side, and they opened up one over in West Orange, which is still Essex County. I didn't eat at either of those two, but they had one on Route 22 again, just down a little further west from Union. It was Jimmy Buff's. It was right next to the Bowcraft, like between the Bowcraft and a Carvel or something. What a nice little stretch of the wonderland for kids, you know. There's a little strip of Route 22 in a place called Scotch Plains, right? Scotch Plains, New Jersey. And as I was a teenager growing up, that's where I would go for my Italian hot dogs, you know, for the good ones, for the real Newark style ones. Like I said, you can get them in any pizzeria, and they were typically never really as good as Jimmy Buff's or Dickie D's. Dickie D's and Jimmy Buff's were almost the same thing. You know, they were done in such a particular way, using particular ingredients. And for me, it was hard to really determine one from the other. I might say that Dickie D's, in my experience as it was back then, tended to be somehow less greasier. It's like they took a step to take some of the grease off it, where Jimmy Buff's would just just slather everything with the grease right on, you know. It's that's how it was, I think, in my assessment. I might tell you that the Dickie D's was a little tiny bit cleaner. I don't mean the rest. Well, the restaurant, Dickie D's in Union, was actually a very clean place. It was new, and but what I mean, the actual Newark style hot dog itself was less greasier. I call that cleaner, and you may prefer it that way, but the taste was all the same. You know, yeah, Scotch Plains, and like, you know, the Italian pizzerias, they had their own Italian. We had a Texas wiener. I grew up, after we left Hillside, we went down 22. Everything is down fucking 22, right? Yeah, most of my life was Route 22. Just moving west, till I finally just broke loose and just went way the hell west, right? Well, we had a Texas wiener. Actually, it was Texas Wiener 2 in Greenbrook on Route 22. There was a Texas Wiener 1, which was the next town over south of there into Middlesex County in Dunellen, right? They had the original Texas Wiener over there, and then they, I guess they expanded. And that place was in business forever. From, I think the sign said established 1924. It's not there anymore. I used to work across the street from it in a car dealership, but we lived there, and I ate there all the time. I loved that place, but they had their own version of an Italian hot dog, and it was not so good. But that's what I would always get when I would go in there. You'd get the Texas-style Italian hot dog, right? And what it was just a cheap replicant of an Italian hot dog done the same way, and it really wouldn't have been so bad. But then they slathered the top of it in some kind of fucking Wolf brand chili or something. They had horrible chili, you know? And it just changed the whole thing for the negative. It really didn't work, but I always got it when I went in there, right? And you could do it to where you kind of knocked the chili off to the side and ate the Italian. They had really good hot dogs that they used at that place. You know, that was a thing. But, so they had the Texas Wiener Italian hot dog. They didn't call it Newark style. They called it Italian. A lot of pizzerias didn't call it Newark style. They called it Italian, but it's Newark style. It ain't just Italian. It's Newark Italian. You know, as far as I'm concerned, Scotch Plains, I was talking about Jimmy Buffs. I ended up, I played softball there a couple of years, really competitive, probably the best league I ever played in. Right. And, the team I played from, this is why I'm bringing it up, we were actually sponsored by a company out of Newark. It was like a fucking, I don't know, what kind of company was that? They did like plumbing supplies and shit like that, if I remember right. But, the guy who was running that company, he was the son of the guy who started it, or grandson or something like that. It was a family business. He was running it. And we were friends from 12-step program, and we put together this team. Like they'd been doing it for a while, and they had a shitty team, and then we just started getting a couple of the right people together, and we formed a really good team, and suddenly became very competitive. And eventually, you know, within 3 years, we won a championship, and that was the first championship in baseball I had ever won. And I played baseball, you know, from the age of like 6 or 7. Outside of the years I was on drugs, I didn't really play. The rest of the time, I was playing something, somewhere. And those were a lot of years to never win. You know, when I was a kid, I never won because I'm going to tell you right now. I don't mean to be like bragging or anything. I was fucking good. I was really good at baseball. And whatever league I would enter into, you know, they would do a draft. You'd have all these new people that didn't have a team and weren't established. And we moved around a lot. And even when we didn't move, you know, we ended up in a town that had multiple leagues in it. I would play one league 1 year, another league another year, and I'd have to go through the whole. Every time I went through a draft, I was always the number one pick. Always, always. Third grade, fourth grade, right? And then fifth grade, sixth grade. Every year I was in a different league, different towns, different league. And I think in the seventh grade, I stepped up to the senior leagues, and I was, again, number one in the draft. And what does that mean? Well, who gets first pick in a draft? The shittiest fucking team from the year before, right? So, do the math. I end up on a shitty team every year. A really good player on a shitty team. And we never won championships, you know. That's a team sport. You can't carry everybody. So that's how my life kind of was. I always ended up on shitty teams. I mean, you get to play in like men's softball leagues. When they get a good team together, they just hold together, and these guys will play for 15, 20 years. And it's hard to break into it unless somebody, you know, gets old and retires, or somebody breaks their fucking leg. But usually you end up, if you want to, you know, get into a new league. I moved around a lot, so I was in this town, I'd go to that league. And how do you get in? You find a team that's just kind of disparate. They're trying to put their shit together. They really can't. They're trying to fill in holes. You know, you get on a team and you end up like on the shitty team again, right? And it was just a constant through my life. And then finally got in a situation where I met this guy. And like, you know, I had three guys and he had three. And we start putting these like super teams together. Then they'd get into a league and they'd just start winning, right? But never got that championship. The last year I played, I was 40 years old. I played in three leagues in the summertime, and all three of those teams made it to the championship. Two of them lost, and the last one was this one, this NORC sponsored team in Scotch Plains, and we fucking won. And that was the only championship I ever won in my life. We created this super duper fall league team. Somebody who I played with, he actually played hardball down in a town called Old Bridge in New Jersey, which is kind of on the way down the shore from New Brunswick, down Route 18. You know, we played out there. He knew some people, and they had a men's fall softball league, and we put together all our shit. We made a super-duper team and went into that league brand new team. And I only played half the season, and I got the fuck out and went back down south. That was the year that I left the south and hung around in New Jersey, unemployed, just playing sports, basically, and chasing girls. But I had to get back down south. So halfway through the season, I left. But they went on to the championship, and they lost to the perennial championship team. In that league, they won it like 8 years in a row or something like that. I mean, they were all stacked with steroids, you know, that sort of thing. And but the team kicked ass otherwise. And those are kind of proud moments, you know. I kind of wish I would have stayed. I could have made that difference, you know. Could have been that one or two runs that they didn't get somewhere along the way. Probably would have been the case. But, yeah, an Old Bridge. It's what I was saying before. I got people from Newark, Bloomfield in my church down here, right? In Texas, I got people from Old Bridge in my church. It's just, you know, New Jersey people just showing up in Texas. It's fucking crazy how small the world is. Yeah, so, on that west side, talking about the west side, I told you, I lived there my first year of my life. I was born downtown, right? Downtown in St. Michael's, downtown Newark, right? The big hospital downtown. So the first street I was ever dragged out onto, and I don't know if it was named it then, but it became, it's Martin Luther King Boulevard now, right? So the first blue sky I ever looked up at was on Martin Luther King Boulevard in Newark. And that's how I look at the world, you know. Start right there. There was pictures of me and my mother being put. I don't know. It might have been pictures of my brother. Either the first car I was in or the first car he was in was just a Volkswagen Beetle. Now my father had driven 67 Camaro, which he crashed, and I was in it, and they lost me for a second. I went up under the console on the passenger side and got trapped behind the glove box or some shit like that. They couldn't find me in the wreck. He drove up on somebody's yard and hit a fucking tree, and it was bad. I don't remember any of it, but they lost me there for me. They couldn't find me in the wreckage. That's the story as I hear it. But he had a 67 Camaro. I was born in 67, so I think he had a Volkswagen leading up to the Camaro that he bought. Then he wrecked the Camaro. So it's probably, but I think he also had some kind of like, not an Impala, some kind of Buick or something. So maybe after he wrecked the Camaro, he ended up in a Volkswagen, and maybe that was my brother getting taken home from the hospital. It's probably the same hospital. So he might have been in the Volkswagen, and I might have been in the Buick or whatever, Pontiac, some GM thing. I don't know. Probably shouldn't even brought it up. I'm not positive about that, but definitely that's where I was born, you know. But I ended up in on the west side the first year, and even though I didn't know about it, and then we moved away from there a couple of times over through history. My father was a soccer player. He's a semi-pro soccer player, and they had some ethnic league out there, you know, their semi-pro league. They were very good, very talented, and he had people from all over the world playing in Newark in this league. You had like the Polish Falcons, and you had a German team, and you had some English team, and you had like a Brazilian team, you had the Italian team, but you also had a Ukrainian team, right? The Newark Ukrainians. They had their own big athletic association. They had a couple churches, you know. They had a one of those Byzantine Catholic, you know, Ukrainian Catholic churches, and they had a Ukrainian Orthodox church. My family is Ukrainian Orthodox. And they had their own club. Now they called it the Sich Club, S-I-T-C-H. That's a fortress in the middle of Ukraine where the Cossacks used to ride out of. You know, it was right on the Dnieper River, the waterfalls all around it, some island fortress. Well, they named their club, and their club was a bar. It's just a corner tavern in Newark. I think it was Sanford Avenue. Not positive about that. I talked to my father about it last time I seen him, and I think that's what he said. I try to find it on Google Maps, and I think I located the building, but it's not a tavern or anything anymore. I don't know. Probably somebody cut it up to rent it out. I don't know. But we were there every weekend. They would play a soccer game, and then we'd go over there, and they would just drink beers, and they'd cut up sandwiches, and it was a bar with pool tables, and I was too small to even see the top of the pool table, and I'd just run around fucking around, and every guy on the soccer team, they wanted to give the little kid a swig of beer. It was just, you know. So every Saturday afternoon, I guess it was Saturdays, I'm getting swigs off everybody's beer. I'm tying one on, you know, as a little kid. I started drinking from, you know, 2, 3, 4 years old. Beer, you know, I'm not hitting shots of whiskey or anything like that, but it wasn't just for soccer games, though. Like, the team would have events there. I remember probably the last time I was there, because I don't even think my father was on the team anymore. He retired in his early 30s from it. But they had a party for my parents' wedding anniversary. And I remember this particular day because, you know, people that normally wouldn't be at the Ukrainian soccer club were there. Family, you know, on my mother's side, particularly my grandfather, right? The guy off Grove Street with the Pabst Blue Ribbon who moved over to Belleville. I want to say I never really liked the guy, but the truth is I don't think he ever really liked me. He never liked my father. He never liked the whole Ukrainian thing. He didn't like me. He didn't like my brother. He was kind of nasty to us all the time, you know. He was kind of nasty to my mother, and he was getting nasty with my. I remember I was going out the front door onto the corner, I guess, on the Sanford Avenue during this party, and he's out there giving my mother a ration of shit over something, and she's like in tears. And I just look at him, I look at her, I look back at him, I do all the math, I put it all together and decide he's a fucking asshole. And I just said, fuck you, grandpa, right? I yelled at her, and he was like mortified. He was gonna kill me. Like, he thought he had the right to do that, that no kid should ever tell him what I said. And he was coming after me, and she freaked out, and it was this whole ordeal. And that's like the last time I remember speaking to him at all. You know, I didn't want nothing to do with him after that. We used to go over to his house. I remember, you know, one memory when they were still over on Grove. Well, you know, I must have seen him in Belleville after the fact, but I didn't speak to him. I wasn't welcome. He didn't like me. And I hated going over there. It's like we would go over to see my cousins, who I did like, and we would play. And they had all their friends in the neighborhood. We would play wiffle ball against the front stairs, the front stoop of people's house and shit. Like, you know, just running around in the city streets. It's what we did. We had a good time. But we would always say, all right, Grandpa just lives down the street. You got to go see your grandfather. I don't want to go see him. You know, dragged by the ear. I didn't like him. I didn't like, he had a woman he was married to. She was nasty to us also. I didn't like her either. And this shit was never resolved. He died when I was in my teenage years, and I didn't give a shit when he did. And it's sad, but true. You know, back in my, I really don't have any good ties with anybody my mother was involved with, any man in her life. You know, not that she wasn't involved with the, with her father, but you know how women kind of marry their father. There's some element of that guy in every guy she's been with. And I don't like any of these guys, including my own father. I've had plenty of issues with him. I don't want to get into all that personal shit, but that's what it was. You know, fuck you, Grandpa. My mother, you know, we talk about my father's side. My mother come from downtown, technically. I mean, Thomas Street, that's how I understand it. St. Columba Church and School. Like basically right in her backyard. I think she went there as a kid. But then she went to East Side High over in the Ironbound, just down the street, right? You just cross over MacArthur Highway, Highway 21. They got that, like that big, I don't know what the hell you call it. I don't want to call it a train trestle, but it's really just this big wall that they made that the Raritan Valley Line, all the trains that go into Penn Station, Newark, roll in on. I don't know what the hell you call it. It's just like this big wall with railroad tracks on top of it. And there's a couple of holes in it that go into Ironbound from downtown. You know, you've got this wall separating these two distinct parts of the city. So she went to school over there in Ironbound on East Side High. I actually had friends, you know, later on in life. They're still friends. Don't talk to them much anymore. But, you know, they grew up in Newark. They grew up in Ironbound. Then they went to East Side High, just like my mother did, you know. A lot of Newark changed after the race riots. Maybe you saw the Sopranos movie that came out earlier this past year, maybe last year, whatever it was. Many Saints in Newark, right? Many Saints. Many Saints is the English way to say Moltisanti. Moltisanti. Chris Moltisanti was the one of the lead characters in the Sopranos series, and they made a movie that went back to the 50s, 60s, early 70s, talking about a couple of other generations, you know, prior generations of Moltisantes. And yeah, I talked about the race riots in that movie and the white flight to follow. You know, they had this white flight, all the Italians left Newark after the race riots. It was, you know, the riots, I don't think, caused people to leave so much as just what caused the riots. And it wasn't really a race thing. They call it race riots because, you know, it looked black and Italian. But to me, and in my way of thinking, and I got my own way of thinking, you might think otherwise, it was really the onset of poverty into established neighborhoods that caused it. And it just so happened that the people who were new into the neighborhoods and poor also had a certain color of skin, you know. But it could have been the opposite. Of course, you know, the Italians immigrated into the area 50, 60, 70 years earlier. And, they showed up in Manhattan. And you see, like, the old stories in The Godfather, right? Godfather Part 2, and they harken back into the 20s and 30s, and you know, the Italians weren't welcome as immigrants. They were regarded as a whole different beast than anything quote unquote American at the time. So everybody, you know, when you come in and you're poor and you got nothing and you live poor, poor brings desperation. Desperation brings theft and crime. And it's just what the situation was, you know. once upon a time it was the Italians who were that, and another part of the time it was a lot of people that were sent up north from the south to live in projects, right? And Newark became called the Brick City. Why? Because there were fucking projects everywhere. There were, you know, the housing and urban development just started slapping up all these high-rise. In Newark, they were high-rise projects. Like in Manhattan, they're high-rise. Down south, they got projects, but they tend to be like garden apartments, one maybe, you know, two stories. But up there, you know, you got high-rise projects all over, you know, every city. And wherever you had a project, you had problems. They were really bad. They were really bad. Like, cops couldn't go in. Ambulances couldn't go in. Fire department couldn't go in. You couldn't get technicians to work on the heating and air conditioning units. They ended up being like blown out, gutted buildings. There were, you basically had a criminal element living in there for nothing or next to nothing, with no emergency services. You know, it's horrible, horrible. And Newark has torn them all down. Probably all of them. I know that was, and they turned it into, you know, some better version of housing. But at that time, that's what was going on. They were bringing all these people in that didn't have anything, and they were throwing, it was, you know, it was equivalent to the tenements that the Italians lived in when they came over from the old world. You just like manufactured these 1960s style versions of tenements and created this cultural strife. You know, it's not racial. It was an economic class difference. It was really what was at the heart of it, but people don't want to talk. People are so fucking superficial. They don't look into everything, you know. But it got called white flight. They didn't call it Italian flight. They called it white flight. You know, did we flee? Yeah, I guess you could say that. I mean, it wasn't until 70 or 71 that we left, but we left to get our own house. We left to, it was just suburbs like anybody else. My father was working down in Springfield, New Jersey, you know. He would have to drive through downtown Newark and shit to be able to get to work. We moved to Hillside. It was half the distance, cut, and there was no traffic heading west at that point in time. There was even nothing out there. That was the boonies. Well, Hillside, not so much, but once you got like out to Union and beyond, it started to be that way. Anyway, oh shit, it ain't no more. Ain't no more. But anyway, so where was I at with that? The Brick City. Yeah, so the Brick City was all the projects that were made out of brick. That's the way I understand it to be. Now, they had a lot of brick buildings prior to that, big factories. My grandparents, when they came over as immigrants, they worked in a glove factory in Newark. There was a couple of them at the time. I don't know which one they were at. I tried to research it and figure it out, but that's where they worked. They were probably taking public transportation. Neither of them learned English. Neither of them learned how to drive. And my grandfather, he's old. He was old farmer, old cavalry. You know, he used to fight swords on horseback, chopping people, literally chopping heads off of people at full trot, you know. But I still listen to Frankie Valli, you know. After all that, you know, like I said, you know, like where Frankie Valli came from, that North Ward in Newark, you had the quote-unquote white flight that went up quote-unquote Guinea Gulch up Bloomfield Avenue out towards places like North Caldwell, eventually, you know, Bloomfield, Belleville, North Caldwell, Verona, Montclair. But not everybody went that way. A lot of people like us, we went down Route 22, right? We went down Route 22. See, like the Guinea Gulch, the Bloomfield Avenue is kind of a northwesterly direction out of Newark, and 22 is more of a southwesterly. It's almost due westerly. That's probably more due westerly, but it went due west at the south part of Newark from Newark Airport, like on the border of Elizabeth. And we lived where Elizabeth and Newark and Irvington and Hillside all came together. We were in this little back neighborhood not far from the parkway. In fact, my grandfather worked at a can company right behind my neighborhood for a while, too. I don't know, American Can Company or something. Some of these memories are just coming back to me on the fly here as I go. But, but you got like along Route 22, a lot of flight down that way. We ended up down that way. And I'm not trying to say that those Newark people who were white and not Italian ended up going down 22. No, Italians went down 22 also. They went all directions, but they went out. You know, they went out of Newark. There's towns that are Italian. I mentioned Greenbrook for one. Like, Greenbrook was an Italian town. It may still be. I lived there as a kid for 2 years. I lived there as an adult for another 2 years. And both times it was Italians, you know. The Italians were in the politicians and the mayor running everything. And yeah, Greenbrook had a little bit of a reputation. You know, if you were undesirable of any kind, you know, their police would pull you over. You go driving through on Route 22, they would pull you over. They kind of had their little profiling thing going on. I don't know how it is now. I mean, many years have gone by, and the world has changed for the better in a whole lot of ways, worse in some ways too. But you know, that's how it was. People out of Newark, Italians out of Newark, settled in Greenbrook, and just next to it, like two towns over, Boundbrook was another one, and just another town or two past that, Raritan was another one. You had all these Italian towns down Route 22. There was another one that was off of 22. It was kind of more like under Scotch Plains, called Clark. Those are four cities, four boroughs, you know, small towns in Jersey off of 22, or a little bit off of 22, where a lot of Italian people ended up going to. And so it wasn't just Bloomfield Avenue like the Sopranos show, you know. The white flight, like I said, it went all directions. But, you know, west, it went all west. A little north, you could say that parts of, like, Belleville, Nutley, you know, people went that away. That's mostly due north. Like I said, Bloomfield Avenue out to the Caldwells is northwest. Out 22 is west. Between the two of them, you know, you had places like Maplewood. You know, Maplewood was a suburb that a lot of people fled to, and further out than that, like Summit. And then south, you know, people out of Newark going south, probably not so much, but a lot of people out of Newark getting places down the Jersey Shore, which was south or something else. But anyway, all that. You know, I still listen to Frankie Valli, you know, to this day. I don't think I ever stopped listening to it. Perhaps as a teenager, I didn't have any Frankie Valli to listen to, and I was really off into more drug-induced, well, like my father called it, the narcotic rock. I was listening to the narcotic rock, and the Four Seasons weren't that. Four Seasons shot straight. You know, they told it like it was. They told it like it was. It was very simple stories, almost invariably about romance. They had their own sound, which combined a whole lot of elements of early rock music, including doo-wop, right? The vocals were very important, and they had harmonies, and they had their own feel for it. I mean, they had the Four Seasons were their own kind of genre of rock music, as far as I'm concerned, right? They had the Newark sound, and it was them. You hear a kid, like, you can even listen to, like, Bon Jovi songs from the 80s, and there's, you know, if you listen carefully, there's a little bit of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons in there. And I don't know how to explain it. It must be just a Jersey thing. You Jersey people probably get what I'm saying. I still probably can't put it into words either, right? But, yeah, I still listen to Frankie Valli and You know, I think sometimes I'm commuting. It must be a sight for me. Yeah, like it must be a sight for people around me driving into traffic and shit, pulling up to like a red light, and there's this big old guy with the cowboy hat and the window down, and there's like some Frankie Valli disco song, you know, flying out of a F-150. You know, swear to God, it's got the whole disco beat to it and everything, and you got this rough tumble cowboy in a pickup truck sharing it with all the world. It must be quite a sight. But yeah, I got the Newark roots, and you know, one thing I probably should mention before I walk away from this, you know, Newark is spelled N-E-W-A-R-K, like New Ark. And you can say it properly, like Newark. Newark, two syllables, but if you're from up there, you just call it Newark. N-O-R-K, Newark, right? All cultures. Wherever you're from, there's a lot of different cultures, like in the Ironbound now, that come from like South America, Central America, and, you know, black culture. All the Italians that came out of there. Ukrainians from the west side, like my family. Newark was always Newark, one word, right? Newark. And I decided, because of my love for those Newark style hot dogs, I created a Newark style burrito, right? Because the bread down here sucks. I can't make a good Newark style hot dog down here because the bread is horrible, right? You can't get pizza roll down here, period. So you make substitutions, and you can get away with that in Jersey where the bread is good, but you can't get away with that down here because all the bread sucks. You know, the best efforts I ever made, like 10 years ago in the past here in Texas, I would use like a loaf, an unsliced loaf of sourdough and kind of gut it so it's not too soury. But it's it ain't the same. So what I come up with was a Newark style hot dog burrito, right? Where I use all the ingredients of your Newark style hot dog, except I replace the pizza roll with tortilla. And then there's another kind of off version that's a little, you know, I use jalapenos instead of bell peppers. So there's two of them, and you know, my wife and I kind of experimented with that a couple of months ago. Man, they were fucking good. Really good. Really good. And I call it the Newark. N-O-R-K. The Newark. There's a Newark 1 and a Newark 2. One is hot, one is not. And I'm thinking now, right, we're rolling up towards the holiday season, and last year for the church, they gave me a turkey to smoke for them. First smoked turkey I ever did. And everybody was just raving crazy about it. This is the best turkey I ever had in my whole life. Smoked turkey is really something to behold. It is a whole different thing. You know, your regular Thanksgiving turkey baked in the oven is garbage compared to a smoked turkey. They're two different things completely. The flavors are two different things. A smoked turkey is great. And everybody was freaking out and loved it. Now they're starting to like pass around the sign-up boards. See, our church, we do a Thanksgiving at church. We have our utilities building where we do all kinds of functions in. It's like a double-wide trailer off to the side. But we host our own Thanksgiving. So the families just come and have Thanksgiving together there at the church. What a great thing. I really enjoy it. And it was a good time. I made that great turkey last year, and I think everybody's going to expect me to do it again this year. But I have to do it. I would have to take the Wednesday off before Thanksgiving. I have to do the smoking on a Wednesday and then bring it. And I can't. I don't want to take a 5-day weekend this year for Thanksgiving because I had to take a day the other day. I got 2 half days this week. I just can't. I can't. I'm not going to get around to it, but I got to make something, right? I'm a good cook. My wife, I'm not a great cook. I'm good at what I do. My wife is a very good cook. She cooks all kinds of really excellent, like Southern fare. I love eating her food. It's really good. It's a good partnership. She cooks, I eat, it works. But I'm thinking about making like a whole like vat of, or a whole heap, stack, pile, whatever, of Norks, N-O-R-K, Norks for Thanksgiving. Enough for most people to get one of them. I got, like I said there, I got Jersey people at my church. They'll know it when they taste it. They'll appreciate it. They'll like it. And that's what I'm thinking. It'd be a lot of work. But it might be worth it. So that's what I'm thinking about. So there you go. The Nork.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Arlen Monologics. Please understand that this project is meant to be part of a long-term archive as a series of snapshots reflecting a distant past. We are not seeking advertisers, but may at times accept private anonymous donations to help mitigate production costs. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Arlen Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at postarlen.com and at onsert.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@postarlen.com.